Hello, and welcome to Hanalyze This, a self-help podcast that just can't help itself. I am one of two Hannahs, Hannah Hart, and today we will be discussing not only the mind, not only the spirit, but also the body. Joined by our expert guest, Dr. Hannah Blank, we're going to be having a conversation starting shortly. Enjoy! Hannah, thank you. Dr. Hannah Blank, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here today. And I also am always excited when there is another Han, you know, not necessarily a Hannah, but a Han. When I'm in the company of another Hannah.
Yeah, there aren't enough of us around, I think.
No, there aren't. I really like it. Hanne. I love it. And I love that your last name is Blank too, because it makes it, you know, like fill in the, you know.
My mother used to joke that she should have named me Philinda.
Like fill in the Philinda Blank.
I'm forever grateful that she did not manage to do that. I think my father put his foot down.
Yeah, I was like, no, we're not doing that. However, it is enough for us to know that your mother was clearly good at making very, very silly jokes.
Yes, indeed.
Awesome. Well, let's introduce you to our listeners, our earbuds here at Hanalyze This. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, your expertise, and what you do today?
Okay, well, my background, I am one of those people who doesn't have a really straightforward career path. I was a professional musician for a long time. And then I left that and I started writing books. And then eventually I decided to go and get my PhD like you do. And so I went and I did that. And I have a PhD in history. I also have done graduate work in bioethics. So I'm also trained as a bioethicist, and most recently I just spent 5 years teaching at Denison University in Granville, Ohio. But my intro here, or my in terms of this podcast, is that I've written a bunch of books, and a lot of them have to do with different aspects of the body and self-image, body image, and how all of that connects to basically culture and how we live in society and how we get along in the world.
So almost from a historical bioethical perspective, brought to you through the vessel of a musician artist.
Right. Who also happens to be a fat person. And I've been a fat person all my life. So I am coming at it from the perspective of somebody who has never been normatively embodied. Which gives me some interesting perspectives on things.
Well, now when a historian says never, I have to really assume you mean, you know, never. I think that, like, in terms of beauty and body image, my mother used to joke that she had always had a very Rubenesque figure, and if she had been born during that time of like painterliness, it would have been the peak of society. But in the modern era, what we've really kind of like idolized here is that other type. But you're the expert. Let me ask you this. Let's back up for a second, just because I know this is not going to be the focus, but I'm just so curious, and it's my show, so I get to ask, what kind of music did you make?
I was a classically trained singer. I got my first union card as a singer when I was 7 years old. And working as one of those little kid sopranos that sort of runs around in the background in operas and sings, you know, three notes here, three notes there. And I ended up becoming a professional classical singer for a while.
Wow. So in that way, your body was a tool, like is a tool for performance. I mean, did you find that as a child, you know, through like, I guess like when you do a performance art like singing or like dance or like movement, you do form a connection to your body? Or do you feel like that wasn't an inherent part of it? Or does that make sense what I'm asking? Like,
it's a very specialized connection to your body, at least when you're a singer. It's all about your breath and about this thing that your body can do, that this particular, like your throat can do. And there's no rhyme or reason to who has a beautiful voice. There, you know, it's absolutely, it's completely randomly distributed. And either you have one or you don't really do anything to deserve it. You don't really, you know, there's nothing that you can do to make it happen if it isn't there. Right. And so in a way, it's one of those things that helped me realize that our bodies and our bodily attributes are in many ways completely random. Because I know for a fact, I know so many people who have always said, oh, I would love to be a singer. I would love to have a gorgeous voice. And they just don't. Yeah. And, you know, you can learn to do better breath support. You can learn to do the mechanics. But in terms of what kind of sound your body makes, it's either there, it's not.
Yeah. Wow. So then going forward into your study of, I suppose, the cultural context, it also must be wild. Sorry, you know, I have to wait for my ADHD medicine to kick in, because here's another thought I just had. It must be wild also to be a historian today, when so much of history is trying so desperately to repeat itself. But now we have like access to like social media and like connection and community. And it's like, even with, let's say, women's rights, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, let's move the needle backwards. And it's like, well, actually, we have this long, long historical reasoning behind why this must stay the way it is today for all other things to kind of come forward. So I guess that must be especially maddening, is what I'm saying.
Well, yes and no. I like when my students ask about, you know, history repeating, I say history doesn't so much repeat as it rhymes. Because things are rarely literally the same. But motifs do repeat over and over and over and over again.
Oppression,
like, right? Well, power imbalance, right? Power imbalance is one of the constants of human history. And depending on where you look and when you look, those issues about power imbalance and who's going to have more and who's going to have less, they get settled in different ways, and the struggles come from different places. So the trick is to not get so caught up in the particulars of how it's happening in any one particular time that you forget that power dynamics have always been part of human history.
It's always been the pendulum. It's always been swinging back and forth. Power dynamics are a part of how society, it's like how humans come together in this power imbalances. And that, I just really love what you said. History doesn't so much repeat itself as it does rhyme. I think that is probably, you've explained it. You've changed my perspective, or put into words something I've been trying to come to terms with as we, you know, as we oscillate, I guess, you know, in history right now.
Yeah, it's tricky, right? Because we see things and we're like, hey, I've seen this before. But then we look a little closer. And because our lives are complicated and the world we live in is complicated, we start going, but this part's not the same. And that part, if it were exactly the same, we'd know what to do. The reason we don't always know what to do is because it's not exactly the same.
No, it's not. It's really not. Yeah. Yeah, I really appreciate that, because that gives me the monochrome of like that little bit of hope that helps keep you moving forward, even though things look similar to how it was. It's almost like when in mental health terms, it's like you have an activating event, and it's like, well, this is very similar to something that has happened in the past. And it's like, yes, but you're different today.
Exactly. You're different. You're in a different place. It's a different day. It's a different time. You have different resources at your disposal. You have different connections with people at your disposal. You know, it's simply not the same. And one of the things that gives me great hope, especially in this particular political moment, is that the American economy would completely collapse if women's rights were rolled back too far. So good luck with that.
Yeah, right. I'm like, are you guys just trying to make sure that you have a never-ending labor force? Is that what this is? Is that how far back we're going, that like we have to keep procreating so that billionaires can stay rich? I don't think so, man. Like, I think it's, yeah, good
it's
luck a little, with
that. It's more complicated than that.
Yes.
It's much more complicated than that. Although, you know, don't get me started on labor force in the United States and the US history and their love of United States love of people we don't have to pay to do our work.
Enslaving people and enslaving bodies. Speaking of bodies, yeah, we're good. So we've said it. We've set the cultural context of our conversation today. So speaking of bodies, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about Dr. Blank's books and so much more. So quickly enjoy this ad, and then stay right where you are, unless you're puttering around, which I understand. Okay, bye.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. Today we're having a discussion about bodies and their relations to ourselves and the context in which we live with Dr. Hannah Blank. Thank you so much for being here. When you decided to write your first book, how did you pick the topic and the way you would approach it?
I didn't, actually. I never set out to write a book. Back in the 90s, I was kind of looking around and noticing there was a lot of sex positive society, a lot of sex positive feminism, a lot of sex positive activism going on. And I wanted to get involved. So I thought it was really exciting and intellectually and also just personally adventurous and fun and interesting. And one of the things that I noticed was there are all of these people doing all of this interesting work and activism, and none of them are fat. Huh. And I was also kind of looking around and going, yeah, but a lot of the people that I know who are sexy and cool and interesting and doing interesting feminist stuff are fat. So what, where do these two Venn diagrams,
the disconnect there?
You know, where do these two Venn diagrams overlap, and, or do they, right? And so I started teaching, you know, in that sort of seat of the pants feminist kind of way, I started teaching seminars, mostly at women-owned sexuality boutiques, basically for fat women to come in and talk about sex and talk about, you know, how can you have a good sex life when you're fat, and, you know, how do you need to sort of grapple with your own self-image and your own sexuality and your body shape and size and how society views all of this stuff in order to be able to live in your body enough to have a decent sex life. So I had been doing that for a while. I had a zine, like you did back in the day. And then I got this email out of the blue from this published little niche sexuality publisher in California saying, hey, have you ever considered writing a book about this? And I absolutely had not. I had really, you know, it never crossed my mind, but I believe in what, you know, the English composer Arnold Bax said, which is that you should try everything once except incest and folk dancing. And it's a great line, right?
That's pretty funny.
And so I said, sure, why not write a book? And so with zero preparation, zero planning, and zero knowledge of what I was doing, I wrote one. And and it worked out okay.
Well, clearly it did, because you went on to write more.
Yes. It's a bad habit. But I have this problem where I keep wanting there to be books about things that nobody's written a book about yet. And so I call it the hole in the shelves problem. You go to the library and there's just this hole in the shelf where you were hoping a book would be.
So right. You're looking for this subject and you're like, it'd be right about here.
Yeah, exactly. And so I end up writing the book.
So I, looking at your wiki right now, it's telling me that your first book is Big, Big Love, a source book on sex for people of size and those who love them.
Yes. 22 years ago.
22 years ago. That is wild. Oh, and then followed by Virgin, The Untouched History. Great title. Loving everything. I'm going to have to buy all of your books. I'm not going to lie. Then we go into Straight, The Surprisingly Short History of Heterosexuality. Fantastic. And most, and then after that, The Unapologetic Fat Girl's Guide to Exercise and Other Incendiary Acts.
Yeah. The most recent book is actually called Fat. And it came out in 2020 as part of the Object Lessons series that's being published by Bloomsbury. It's a little book. They're short. They're about 30,000 words. You can sort of read it on the subway. Cool. And that is a book that's all about fat in all of its many manifestations as you know, just sort of a substance, as something that we have in our bodies, as a macronutrient, you name it. We've got it in there somewhere.
And you probably can tell, but because we don't discuss weight and fat in a healthy way, I'm unpracticed at having a casual conversation about it, because that truly, you know, and that really, I think, as a mirror onto myself, I can really see like, oh God, they got me again. So deeply seated inside you that I'm hesitant to even say the word, because it's like been like so told that it's like, no, that's a bad word. But like, why would that be a bad word? So let's start there. Where do people begin when they have not yet started a body acceptance journey? Like, how does that make sense? Because that's really what does. I would love to talk to an expert about. Like, we can go to the meta, we can go to the societal, but like here and analyze this, it's really about the personal.
So a lot of times when people really haven't started doing that work, and it is work. Let me not, you know, minimize that. This is work. We live in a culture where fat is demonized in like every possible way. Although we had a little relief when the paleo people kind of came swooping through with their fat is fine as long as you don't eat anything that didn't come from an animal. Go team.
sure, yeah, surely this. Hey, you know what? Let's just go all the way to the other end of the spectrum.
Well, you know, anything that limits your choices for food intake enough will cause you to lose weight. That's kind of how that works. Yeah. But anyway, we live in this culture where fat and fatness, particularly human fatness, is so demonized and has been for a long time. None of us, we don't have a place to stand outside of that culture where we can look at it with fresh eyes and say, what the heck's going on here? That doesn't exist. And so the first thing that happens when people start thinking about this issue is there's a lot of cognitive dissonance.
Yes.
You know, how, like you were saying, how do you even talk about this? We don't even have the language. I wasn't equipped with that language. You weren't equipped with that language. This is language we have to acquire, and it's thinking capacity that we have to acquire if we're going to do this work.
I mean, yes, I can only imagine, you know, obviously I have loved ones I can think of, and I would want to imagine them saying like, hey, I've decided to like really love being fat, or like really be okay with my body, or really love myself. I'm going to go that direction. Or like that people, even when you're trying to seek comfort from those you love, they're not equipped with the language to receive it and to help guide you. So then it's like community. Exactly. So it's like, so where would you, where does someone go next? Let's say they don't want to tell their friends and family because of their own preconceived notions. I mean, as a queer person, it reminds me a lot of realizing I needed queer community to heal myself, that I can't heal myself in my cis heteronormative social juncture. And I spent, honestly, even like the last 3 years, a real time focusing on a fortress of community and solitude. But anyway.
Well, actually being queer in some ways is a really great metaphor and a really great comparison. As a queer woman myself, you don't find comfort with your queerness sitting in your room by yourself. Although the internet definitely helps, right? In a way that didn't exist when I was, you know, coming out. And in some ways I'm glad that it didn't, because it forced me out of the house. you know, force me to go and, you know, find other actual humans in 3D.
Go to body positivity sex boutiques and be like, you know what? You can have great sex no matter what, how, or like you can view yourself or, yeah.
Right.
Sorry,
yeah. You can exist in this other context and it can be okay and fun and fruitful and you meet people and they're doing the same work that you are. And I don't like to pretend that any of us have it all figured out. Right. I mean, yeah. Like as with homophobia, fat phobia begins at home. Yes. And we are all taught this from little childhood. I mean, there are actually studies, I'm not going to get too academic on you, but there are studies on toddlers where they choose pictures of people, you know, fat people, thin people, black people, white people. And as toddlers, you know, barely even verbal, they have already internalized that white thin people are the ones they're supposed to pick.
Right.
So that's how entrenched these ideas are.
Yeah.
In us.
I mean, the images you see and what media portrays play a huge, huge, huge part.
And what your family says, you know, and the kinds of reactions that family members have to people that you encounter out in the world or within your family, you know, like, oh, that's Aunt Pat. Yeah, she's always had a weight problem. Instead of, oh, Aunt Pat's coming over. She is a Scrabble shark.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there are a lot of things you can talk about when we talk about people, but we choose what we choose particular ones. Right. And you pick up on that as a kid and, you know, throughout your life. Socialization is all around you all the time.
So if you're seeking, you know, obviously I would say if somebody is like, man, you know, I'm really trying to come to terms. I'm really trying to grow in terms of my body positivity or accept my body for the way it is and live the best, happiest, healthiest life within it. At this point, I would say, well, I think you should read Dr. Hannah Blake's book, Big, Big Love. So start there, read her entire catalog. But what would you say, you know, did your body acceptance come through the avenue of sex positivity or feminism? Was it?
It was both. It was, and it was also honestly the queer community, and it was being out in community and looking around at all of these fantastic queer women, and seeing the ways that queer women reject heteronormative Eurocentric body standards. And granted, that's not uniform, right? We all know that. You know, we all have that little L word problem as well. the first time I saw the L word, I was like, are they supposed to be queer? Because they all look pretty to me. I mean, they just led so straight, you know, thin LA. It's, you know, very primped, very polished.
I was like, it serves its purpose for its period of time, right?
Like, I was just like, where is the big burly butch with hand tattoos, please?
Yeah, I mean, it's not there. That's for damn sure. You know, I actually think that like, some of the like, I guess like most, there's something like so sexually like powerful and like giving you your real like authority and owning that ownership we should all always have been given of our own bodies and the way we want to portray them and the way we want to exist. Like you said, that big sexy butch covered in tattoos, who's probably a chef who like, you know, who knows, but like seeing that portrayed in society, even in queer society, it's not really what we get to see. So, but in queer actuality and queer community, you were able to see
exactly.
That.
And I saw this amazing diversity. And I like to joke that I was raised by drag queens. Because I came out, you know, in the early 90s into a queer women's community that was not very accepting of femmes. And, but the drag queens thought I was great. So I was also spending a lot of time around people who were not gender normative. Mm-hmm. I was spending a lot of time around, you know, people with lush and voluminous chest hair in heels. And so I was seeing all of these bodies that were not what culture had taught me, you know, were what I was supposed to want or think was sexy or think was amazing. And that I thought all of these people's bodies were amazing. All of these people were amazing and they were doing amazing things. And creating that sensibility and also that solidarity with other mm-hmm. people whose bodies were not the, you know, this heteronormative, thin, white, Eurocentric paradigm was really generative for me. It was really, really helpful for me.
So let's talk about the paradigm for the introverts. Okay, let's say like somebody is like, well, that sounds great if you want to go out and make a bunch of friends or you're feeling very social. But what if I'm somebody who wants to love my body in a new way and I'm an introvert? What historical, like that paradigm you speak of, could we explain it? Could we talk more about that to show how this is another like system of control? Or like, I guess the question I should ask is, when did that paradigm start? Or is there a timeline in history? Like, you know what I mean? I'm trying to be the subheading on the textbook and I'm no good at it.
Yeah, no worries. Well, I mean, I will get there in just a second. But first I'm going to say, if you're an introvert and you don't want to go out and hang out with people, go absolutely anywhere that is outdoors, that has lots of people moving through it. Wear your mask, you know, be smart. But, you know, go sit on a park bench on a busy street or a busy corner, wherever, and look at people's bodies. You don't have to talk to them. I promise it's okay. But if you actually pay attention to the bodies you see in the world, in their natural habitat, you will notice that they run an amazingly large gamut. And no matter how weird or aberrant you think your body may be, you are not even close. You really aren't.
You exist. Amongst
the rest of the human species, here you are. Congratulations. And we all run around in these weirdly shaped meat sacks. Congratulations, you've got one too.
Yeah.
Because just that, from a really pragmatic perspective, just realizing that we all have bodies, and you know, we get up in our heads and we think it's fine for everybody else to not be perfect, but it's not okay for me.
Or like, because I'm not perfect, because I'm already not this one aspect of myself, why even try to be the others? Why even like it? Really, I believe that the relationship to the body, unlocking that, will only improve all aspects of your life. You're like, oh, like, because so many people are so trained to be literally disconnected, dissociated from their bodies out of shame, out of whatever. And that, you know, in the mind, body, spirit, mindful living analogy, body plays a part.
Yeah. I mean, everything comes to you through your body, you know, and you can choose to like that or not. That's, you know, that's up to you, but it's still there.
Yeah.
You don't get to skip out on having a body.
Correct. Correct. You don't get to skip out on having a body. And that's something I came to terms with myself even. And I'm not someone who's ever experienced that particular feeling towards my body, but I've experienced other negative feelings towards my body. I mean, everybody has them. And I remember when I started my current therapy work, saying to my therapist, I walked in, I sat down and I said, I'm here so that I can connect below my neck. I feel like I live my entire life from the shoulders up and I don't want to be that way anymore. I want to feel what's going on. And she's like, well, what are you feeling right now? And I was like, nothing. I just said that that's what I want. So this is going to be our work. So excuse me, we don't know each other. And then like a year later, I was like, my chest is tight, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to develop that facility. Right? Because it's very convenient, not only for the form of Christianity that's most prevalent in the United States, which believes, you know, the body is basically inherently sinful and bad. So we don't want to pay any more attention to it than we absolutely have to, because danger, danger. And I've often said, you know, as far as Protestant Christianity, it's stranger danger. Like, we don't know what this is below the neck. And so anything that it might do could potentially be dangerous to us, which is a slightly effed up way of thinking about this thing that you live in. you know, literally
and
from the
experience the world through, as you said, we intake everything through our body. So to cut it out of the relationship, even if society has not handed you a relationship with your body, society has not handed any of us one, but in particular, people who are fat, see, look at me go. Look at me go. You have every right to manifest that relationship for yourself in your life.
Yeah. And remember, this is the longest relationship you will ever have. Every other relationship in your life pales by comparison in terms of its duration. So if you want it to be a good relationship, you kind of have to put in the work, right? To make sure that you know what this thing is and what you're doing. But you had asked about a timeline. And this is actually a question I love because we don't have a good timeline. Historically speaking, we have this sort of wishful mythology that back in the old days, you know, people's bodies could look like anything and people were comfortable with that and it was fine and nobody worried about how they looked in a swimsuit. And that's true because we didn't have swimsuits. But bodies and body expectations and beliefs about what was beautiful and what was not beautiful have changed many, many times. All you have to do is go to any art museum and look at the bodies. And depending on where you go and when you go, time and space, what people wanted to depict and the kinds of bodies people found worthy of depicting changes. So there is not this sort of magic golden age where all fat bodies were considered beautiful or where all bodies with, you know, small boobs were considered beautiful or whatever. It's not true. For much of human history, as far as we can tell, somebody who was relatively, you know, and I say relatively, not by our standards, but by the standards of their time, somebody who's relatively plump was considered attractive because it meant that you had enough to eat, which meant that you were probably doing all right, which meant that you might be a catch.
Yeah, man, you got some money. You look like you've been fed.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the reasons that we do in art around the world. We see images of bodies that don't necessarily compare favorably to current Western media images of bodies. Mm-hmm. But they're not abnormal bodies. They're not unusual bodies. They're just bodies that have had enough to eat.
Human bodies.
Yeah. So we really do like to... On the whole, we love to believe that, you know, just as we love to believe that there was a time that, you know, everything was a matriarchy and it was all, you know, peace, love, herbs and bunnies. And that probably didn't exist either, as far as we can tell. But
we're not trying to return to something.
We're trying to invent something. And what we're trying to invent is we're trying to invent a world in which we can see human diversity and not run screaming out of fear that this is so different from us that it presents a danger to us in some way, or that this is so desirable that it threatens our own ability to exert control.
Yeah. Or that the power structure set up is so detrimental that it must be burnt to the ground. So,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I want to, you know, one of the things that people that I'd love to debunk, or at least discuss, now I don't want to say debunk, that implies I know your opinion on it, but, discuss is, the relationship between quote unquote fatness and health, because I read a really interesting piece years ago, that really changed my perspective on what we call quote unquote healthy health, this, that, like physical body health. And I'd like to ask you about your thoughts and opinions on the subject right after this. And we're back. Now, one of the number one, I guess, rebuttals I hear amongst the skinny regarding like people being comfortable with their bodies is these ideas of health and wellness and like, oh, well, if somebody's overweight, that means that they're unhealthy, they're not treating themselves well, blah, 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 blah. Now, to be fair, one of the most unhealthy lifestyles I've ever gotten close to living was a skinny-based lifestyle. And the Marvel movie lifestyle of 0% body fat and like, look at these muscles and oh my God. And it's like, yes, this is basically a drawing. It's a cartoon. These are cartoonish people. This is not reality. And it's certainly not necessarily a healthy one. Is being fat unhealthy? This is, I guess, my question, or can we discuss this area?
We can absolutely discuss this. I think that there are very few things that are inherently unhealthy. The dose makes the poison. And that,
I mean, damn, God, I love listening to you talk. I'm buying all your books. I love the way you speak. I'm like, wow, the dose makes the poison. Wow.
But you know, people have been saying that about actual drugs and, you know, and herbs and, you know, distillates and
ketamine,
things like that, and tinctures for, you know, for at least 1,000 years. Because there are always things that in small amounts can help you and in large amounts can hurt you. And that is a lot of how I look at fatness and health. Bodies generally do fairly well somewhere in the middle 2/3 of a bell curve. You know, and that's true of everything. That's true of being on the underweight end of the bell curve. It's true of being on the quote unquote overweight end of that bell curve, right? It's true of even how much water you drink. I mean, you can die of drinking too much water. It's not pretty. So anything that people tell you is healthful is probably healthful in moderation.
To an extent, yeah.
Yeah, right? And even then, it's not going to be helpful for everybody all the time. Because bodies really are wildly different. And people's tolerance for particular things in terms of how their bodies function and how their bodies react is wildly different. So we have to bear in mind first that this idea that fat is not healthy comes from an idea that all bodies are supposed to be one way.
Right. There it is again.
And once we let go, once we let go of that idea that all bodies are inherently supposed to be one way, boy, does it get complicated fast. And
well, then it becomes unique.
And we don't like it when things about bodies become complicated fast. Again, this is stranger danger. We don't know this meat sack that we carry around somewhere below our chins, right? So, oh crap. It's not the same as this person over here and that person over there. What does that mean? You know, yeah. One of the questions that that people get, that doctors get, and that I've gotten a lot from students is just people coming up and saying, is whatever it is, you know, is my ear normal? Is my penis normal? Is my butt normal? And you almost always the answer is yeah. I mean, normal is a very wide, wide thing.
Yeah. Normal is 8 billion bodies.
Right. You know, they don't all look the same. They don't all work the same. And I think, too, that that's also true in terms of health. If we think that tend to think that bodies should all be the same, we also think that health is the same for all people. Health is not the same for all people. Not all bodies are capable of this sort of medical textbook standard of health. Just using myself as an example, I'm one of, you know, the hundreds of thousands of people who were diagnosed female at birth who have polycystic ovaries, right? And who have all the symptoms of this thing called polycystic ovarian syndrome.
PCOS.
Yeah, I didn't create it. I didn't ask for it. It showed up. And what that means is that I can only be quote unquote healthy within the parameters that my PCOS body will do. So for instance, my body is never going to use insulin the way that somebody else's might. And that's not because I did something wrong. It's because this thing showed up, you know, this aspect of my body, it exists the way it exists. I have a colleague who's deaf from birth, and I asked her once if she ever wondered what it would be like to be hearing, and she said, "No, why would I? This is just what my body does. You know, it's what my body's always done. I have no idea what it would be like to be different, so why would I even wonder about it?" And she said, "I think it would be more convenient, but it was, she's just like, why would I even worry about it? And I loved that conversation because her deafness put her in a place where she didn't really have the option to consider her body functioning in another way, right? It just is what it is. But we have all been schooled to believe, and this is a pretty historically recent thing, right? Within the last 150 years or so, to believe that we can perfect our bodies. Right. And that this optimal state of health, right, the optimal wellness people who crack me up every time, right, that's actually a thing that exists in the world. It's not.
What if your hormones have a different baseline, bro? I mean, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Optimally well for your body in this particular moment in your life. You know, I'm perimenopausal, you know, doing all of that exciting stuff. And what feels healthy to me now is not what felt healthy to me when I was in my 20s.
Mm. And what I'm really hearing is that that's not only okay, but necessary. If you're going to have a happy, healthy relationship with your body, which is a part of a happy, trifold relationship to your life.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to have a body, it's necessary. You can be happy with it or not. That's really, you know, that's up to you. But your body bodies are going to do weird shit. They just are. And if it hasn't happened to you yet, strap in because it's coming. Yeah. And I really deeply understand the urge that people have to believe that they have control over what their bodies do and will do. We all want to believe that that's true. Right. We all want to believe that if I just, you know, eat kale 4 times a week, then I'm never going to get COVID. Well, COVID doesn't give a crap whether you've eaten kale 4 times this week.
Yeah.
That's not how COVID works.
Yeah. And in fact, maybe missing out on that group dinner with your community might have been a better dinner than sitting at home eating the kale that you want so you don't get COVID. Like, right. You brought up PCOS, and I've been dying to share this, but like, this is exactly, it's not, we so much want to blame ourselves and to for our bodies responding in different ways to our efforts, like being like, well, then it's my fault and I'm not putting enough effort and that I've done something to deserve this. When in the reality, you know, everybody's body is different and you are living in only yours. My partner, my wife, she, you know, grew up playing sports, had a very athletic body her entire life, mid-20s hits, boom. She also gets diagnosed with PCOS. And after her mid-20s, her body and her ability to exercise and shed fat or do whatever, you know, she was doing, build muscle, la, la, la. She built muscle, great. But it changed. And that was really frustrating because she remembered herself as a teenager. And that was her standard she was holding herself to. Fortunately, after 6 or 7, like where we are today, she's like, we have totally different bodies. I go work out once a week and I get definition. I build muscle really fast and shed fat really, really, really fast. She works out 3 times a week just to stay at par. And that was a source of internal conflict and a relational conflict because I would be like, well, maybe I should just stop working out. And then I'm like, Hannah, you're codependent. Stop. but for her, now she's at peace with it. She's like, oh yeah, I have PCOS. So this is what it looks like now. That's me. This is where I bloat. This is where I gain weight. This is how I am now. But that took therapy and effort. That took the work that you described.
Yeah. And it really is work. And it's never a done deal, right? You're never finished because your body keeps changing. I recently hung out with my 98-year-old grandmother, who is fantastic. And you know, and I asked her how she was doing, and I really love her approach, which has formed over 98 years of her living in her body, which is, she said, I'm fine. I can still fasten my bra in the back. And most people my age can't do that because they're dead.
Oh, that's excellent.
You know, and that's kind of how you have to roll with it, is that your body's going to do what it's going to do now in this moment for you. And, you know, next week, next year, in 10 years, it's going to be doing something different. And it's natural. It's only human to get frustrated that it's not doing the same thing that it used to do, or it's not doing the thing that it did before you had to take X medication, or, you know, or before, you know, COVID kept so many of us inside all the time or whatever. But, you know, that's life. Life is not static, and neither is your body.
And your body is could be totally different from your biological family members. It really is as unique as snowflakes and fingerprints and all of those beautiful, magical fractals, just crazy shit, man. And I suppose, you know, as we wind down, I would love to invite people to explore the journey of how to find love for their body, because it is solely and truly yours. And it will be, like you said, the longest relationship you'll ever have.
Longest relationship you're ever going to have. And also, it's the one you've got. If you spend all your time waiting around for another one to magically arrive, or to arrive through lots of hard work, you're wasting time.
Yeah. Yeah. Fine. Yes. 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 Okay, great. Well, I want everyone to find you. Where can people go if they want to hear more from you or want more direct, I guess, perspective too? You know, like we're winding down this podcast. And one of the things I really, really wanted to make sure that people heard was that we've talked a lot about trauma in the body from my experiences. But in terms of body weight, body image, body positivity, don't shy away from wanting to find out how to love yourself. And it's okay if you're not there yet. You know?
Yeah, it's always a work in progress. And even people who you think have it all figured out and are always at peace with their bodies, all of us have that day when we're just like, what is this blob?
That was my, yeah. What is this blob? What the hell? What am I? What is happening?
Yeah. And that's okay. You know, because again, things change.
You know what that blob is? It's yours.
It's yours. I mean, turn it into a party palace. I mean, have fun with it. You might as well. You know, if you want to put on a new balcony, go nuts. I think that, you know, and this is one of the places where I think that fatness is inherently queer, is that we're saying, you know, that our society is telling us that only one kind of body is really valuable. And I'm going to turn around and say, screw you, because I have a body and this is my vehicle for moving through the world. And therefore it's inherently valuable. It makes me possible. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. Too bad. I'm here anyway. Mm.
Yes, this is my vehicle for moving through the world, and that makes it inherently valuable. Yes, you have value, you have worth. If people want to follow your work or buy your books, as I am going to do shortly after this podcast or after we're done recording, where can people find you on the internet in a place where you wish to be found?
The internet, the best place to find me is on Twitter @SignalHannahBlank on Twitter. I have a website. It's in the process of being updated. You can also find all my books on bookshop.org, which is much better than the non-indie bookstore versions. So I encourage you to use that, or go to your local indie bookstore and just say, hey, you know, hook me up. That works too. But the best place to find me these days is on Twitter.
Okay. Awesome. Again, that's Hannah Blank, HannahBlank. I just followed you. I hope that you guys follow too. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. I know that I have truly benefited from it. And if you are an earbud listening, considering inviting your body into your life, I would say start this episode over and buy all these books, man. Yeah, you can do it. I believe in you.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. It was fun.
Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you guys soon. Bye-bye.